Well, I did have an almost undying love for Kurt Wimmer's Equilibrium. I mean, let's be honest. When I saw Gunn Carter, I thought this is the most amazing thing I have ever seen in my entire life.
How quickly can we fire Mark?
I love that. But on subsequent rewatches, you do kind of go, oh, yeah.
it's not really that good, is it? But
I like that. But oh, yeah.
You're going to hold on to that love for Stealth, aren't you? Yeah. Hello and welcome to the AV Forum's Movies and TV podcast for April 2024. Tonight, I'm joined by Tom Davis.
Hello, I've hurt my back.
He's hurt his back. Mark Costello.
Hello, I've hurt my toe.
Oh.
Wait, are you just making stuff up?
Of course I am.
Oh, go fine.
I'm mocking his pain.
And that's nice. Nice, nice. And Simon Crust.
Hi, I've hurt my elbow.
As what have you hurt?
I'm fine.
I'm
currently touching wood and hoping that nothing happens.
Do you what, Kaz? I mean, I know you're looking forward touching to this, wood. Mate, but that's a little bit too much to share.
Right. For our April movies and TV podcast, we'll be going through a top 10 list of things to watch in April. There's been some nice TV additions to this and a whole bunch of nines. We're all about the nines at the moment, which is crazy. I mean, it's going to be the best month of the year by far. And we're going to then dive into our topic of the month, which is what makes a top 10 movie or TV show. First, competitions. The big one is you can win a set of Kef LSX2 LT wireless speakers worth $899. This pair of speakers is a streamlined version of LSX2 model and shares the same immersive high-fidelity sound and many of the key technologies, but with a more wallet-friendly price tag. The winner gets to choose the finish of their choice from sage green, stone white, or graphite grey.
The green is handsome. It's handsome, I say.
You can't enter.
I was just fine.
Competition closes in a few days, 11:59, Thursday, 25th of April. It'd be hilarious if it closed before this podcast went live, especially after I got the voice. Previous winners, RGB 123, won a pair of brand new Q Acoustics M40 speakers worth £749, courtesy of
Nice.
Very nice. And Irritated Badger is slightly less irritating. Now, one of Valencia Tuscany XL Ultimate Luxury Onyx Cinema Seat worth $2,200.
Let's see him get it in his set.
I think he wanted the one in sage green.
That's why he's irritated.
New patrons, The Box, thank you. And bought us a coffee, Matt Evans and Mr. Black 79. There's
thank
also
you.
A bunch of competitions. But for the movies and TV stuff, a few competitions from Mark's delicious top 10 for April. Wow. And a couple of 4K competitions just added for the Ealing sets that Simon reviewed. Mm-hmm. So head over, get some competitions. Let's have a look at our top 10 for April. What didn't make the list is Disney's Wish. Nobody wants to talk about Disney's Wish.
Oh, can we not at least talk about how great Chris Pine is in it? Because he is.
Sure.
That's the good thing about it.
It's a very limited good thing.
It's a very,
I will
very
never watch it again just for Chris Pine, despite him being good. It's not enough reason to watch it again. Netflix's remake of Wages of Fear, I don't think I'll watch in the first place because of your review, Tom.
Can you imagine if that had made the top 10? What a meager month it would have been.
There hasn't been like a title below 7, and there's actually a couple more in the offing, which could push it up to more 8s and 9s. And at the time of recording, we haven't had the chance. Mark's going to go and see Abigail.
Oh, yes.
We're hoping to see the Zendaya drama challenges, maybe, but I don't know. I'm looking for...
Are we?
Looking for
Are
volunteers.
We?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's not Mark. So there no. we go. So maybe not. Who knows? And everyone's up for more Rebel Moon. So that'll be great.
That's no moon.
Two thumbs up. That's what makes a 10 out of 10 movie. That's Zack Snyder knows.
That's a big pile of poo.
God.
What have we got in the list left? We have The End We Started From, number 10. American Rust, Broken Justice, number 9. That's on Amazon, for those who can't find it on Amazon. Kung Fu Panda, 4. Is at number 8. Monkey Man, really enjoyed that. Dev Patel directed, gives it his all. It's, sure, it's Indian John Wick, but it's a bit more than that. And kudos for him for trying. The First Omen, Mark was surprised by that.
You bet your ass I was.
I mean, it was called The First Omen, and I expected it to be absolute drivel, but you gave it a 7 out of 10, and it made the number 6 on this.
I did. Well, I mean, look, let's be honest. Any film called The First Omen, I mean, you should have heard the conversations I had with my mates. You know, The First Omen, it's pretty good. Yeah, it scared me as a kid. No. The First Omen. Yeah, that one from years. Oh, Jesus, forget it. So apart from hilarious titling, no one wanted a prequel. No one needed a prequel. It was obviously going to be utter crap. And I'll be honest, the story, well, the story is the weakest part by a long shot. It takes huge liberties with the lore of the first film. However, I don't know what Arkasha Stevenson has been drinking, smoking, snorting, reading, watching, you name it. Considering this was her feature debut, it's been smashed out the park. It looks amazing. It's dripping in atmosphere. It's got a real 70s gritty vibe to it. And not just that, an Italian 70s vibe to it, which is so my jam. So, yeah, colour me very, very surprised. I could have honestly done without the sequel baiting final shot. This should have been a one and done. And
yeah, but you're going to watch it, Mark.
Well, I am now, to be fair. But it just...
Wait, oh. Does the sequel not already exist in the form of the first?
No, it's going to be the second First Omen.
The second Omen. The second Omen 2.
The first second... Oh, I don't know.
Omen 2 squared. Hang on, what?
The first Omen 2. That doesn't work either.
Two Omen.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
It's good. It's better than it ever expected. It's probably a bit of a shame that it came out a week after Immaculate, which, considering I haven't seen Immaculate, by all accounts, it's virtually the exact same film. But hey ho. Mm. Yeah, it's good. Go watch it.
No.
Wow.
Well, there you go.
It's not usually Kaz that derails the
I was going to say, look at that.
It does actually sound good, Mark. I've just got a lot of Omen to catch up on if I have to watch it. It's going to be like a Nightmare on Elm Street thing all over again.
Because on this one, you start at the first one, Kaz. The clue
which one do I start with? No, which I start with this one?
Move along. Nothing to see / listen to here.
I didn't expect equally Godzilla XCOM. In fact, I'm going to say this about almost everything that we covered. There's a lot of didn't expects. I didn't expect any of the following ratings. I didn't expect Godzilla XCOM to be any good. They run in the trailer. I don't even watch trailers.
They look like Batman and Robin when they run. It's great.
They run in the trailer, and I was like, this is going to be terrible. Took the kids to see it. It was absolute nonsense, but I had a blast.
How could you watch that trailer and think this is going to be terrible? You watch that trailer and think this is going to be amazing. Like,
no, I watched the trailer and saw them run, and I thought that it had proper jumped the shark. It's like that moment when you're on board with the Fast and Furious Fast 5 hijinks,
yeah,
and then you get like Fast X, and you see the trailer, and you're like, no.
But it does jump the shark, but it's a cool shark, so it's okay.
It is, yeah. I mean, I'm okay. It was
it jumps the shark horizontally, flying and kicking with both legs.
You know
exactly
what?
That's how
I
it jumps
really,
the shark.
Really enjoyed this utter nonsense.
It's a hoot.
If the Transformers sequels were half as entertaining without being unpleasantly bad, I would equally rave about them.
It's good that it takes itself as seriously as it deserves to take itself, which is not at all.
Yeah, yes, and Dan Stevens,
and Dan Stevens,
yeah, and
very handsome man,
yeah. Sugar, I don't know what honey, I expected honey. From this. Yeah, Apple's new noir TV show, Colin Farrell. I thought it was great. I thought it was going to be terrible from the opening few minutes, which is set in black and white, and you can't quite guess the period straight off the bat. And it soon turns color and turns out to be a modern day romp. But absolutely, it is about a character. I mean, it's clearly made by people who love the genre, and it is about a character who loves the genre. Mm-hmm. And there's something superb about writing it that way. I mean, Colin Farrell's character is a private investigator, and he only does missing people's cases, and his whole character has been built on all of the Gary Cooper, Humphrey Bogart archetypes, very moral. I mean, they flash images of them whenever he's doing his case. But the genius thing about him is that he actually loves these movies himself. He like obsesses over these movies. And it's a lovely kind of meta way to make it noir through and through.
Anything has disappeared in the third episode?
I have not watched the third episode. Too hard. I haven't watched the third episode because the one fault I'm going to lay on it is I can't abide 30-minute episodes for a weekly show. I'm not having it. If you're going to give me 30-minute episodes, sure, either lay down two or drop them all at once, Netflix style. Mm. If they're hour long, give me them weekly. If they're literally 30 minutes with credits, no. I'm going to
like how not arbitrary at all this is, Kaz.
Hill to die on.
I am not doing it.
About
really
42 episodes?
I'm not doing it. I did the 42. I'm not doing the 30. I did 36. I'm not doing... The last one was 32, and I went, no.
Oh, that's disappointing to hear, Si, because I loved the first two episodes.
Yeah, well, don't watch the third, because it's 32 minutes, and Si should have known better.
Oh. It's all your fault, Si.
It might pull itself back. It's trying to add in a bit of mystery that is a bit, oh, really. But we'll see. I might be mistaken. It's early days.
Yeah.
30
minutes later into it, and it's ruined.
It should be 75 minutes long, right? All the best shows are 75 minutes long these days.
Are they?
Well, I believe we're about to talk about one.
That's a segue. It's called a segue, Kaz.
Okay. No, Fallout, this is another one, isn't it? This is all of them is like this. Fallout, we're all ragging on before it comes out, and we're all mocking Mark.
Were ragging on it.
Sure, yep. Sure. And 100%. You thought it. Yeah,
it was quite good.
Before it came out. We're just mocking Mark.
We do that anyway.
He had to, yeah, that's
so
true.
So many things to mock me for.
He had to review it, and the run times on the episodes are just insane. It was like 75, 72, 48, 49, 65, 70, you know, and it went on forever for 8 episodes. So
20 minutes of that is adverts and credits, so.
Yeah, but it turns out to be 9 out of 10. Mark loved it.
What can I say?
He's got to watch more Netflix for me.
You can get yourself stuffed right off. Oh, I'll tell you what, Kaz. The only things I will watch on Netflix are French shark films set under the River Seine.
No, I think all those. Tom's I already watch. Watching that.
I will watch.
Can't wait for that. Sounds brills.
I think. When he joined us, he said, but only if I can watch all shark-related movies.
I said something along those lines. Yeah, I did. That's true.
To be fair, he deserves it after the Requin. I still don't know what that word means.
It's a type of shark.
Is it? Are you sure?
Well, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Oh, okay. Anyway, Fallout. Yes, I've spent many hours sunk into Fallout 3 on my trusty Xbox. I was a little nervous after the dour load of old arse that was Silo, because this is exactly how this starts. You'll know, people who've played the game will know it's set nearly 200 years, nearly 300 years in the future. There's been a nuclear war. Mankind has been sequestered into various underground vaults to survive the horrors of the desolate wasteland, and you know, stuff happens. But what this gets absolutely spot on is it hits that absolute sweet spot of beautiful design that has a real eye for detail for the game. So fans of the game will be, Tom sent a very good meme, the infamous Leonardo DiCaprio meme of, like that. And he's right, you're doing that every five, six, 7 minutes. But it blends it with some really good characters. Ella Pinnell in this is just an absolute hoot. She is cornbread Americana 1 minute while smashing someone's brain in with a pipe and then apologizing for inconveniencing her dead victim. It's got a dry sense of humor that runs throughout. Walton Goggins is just ace as a...
Walton Goggins.
Yeah.
That, yeah, yeah. That's what I said.
No, as Walton Goggins.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
He's nasally challenged in this, but that
he is,
you know, he may only be 98% Walton Goggins, but that's good enough.
That's enough.
But I'm also digging so far, and I has to be said, I have only seen the first two episodes, but I'm liking the way it's weaving some interesting narrative through all of that and bringing it all together. There's some really interesting stuff here with three plot strands. I won't go into the detail, it's all in the written review, but so far I expected this to be a complete dog's dinner. Even though I enjoyed the Halo TV series up to a point, the trailers for this had me feeling it was going to be worse than that. Couldn't be any further from the truth. This has been absolutely joyous so far, two episodes in, and I'm one of the very few that I'm going to carry on all the way through to the bitter end. If for nothing other than to mock Tom about how he's about it all.
It's like, it's okay. I don't mind it. It's fine. But I'm, yeah.
Well, I've never played the games, and
neither have I.
I think it's pretty good, actually.
The
world building's pretty armor, good.
The power armor is very cosplay-y and very like somebody's put like is spray painted styrofoam. It doesn't look very heavy.
Wow, that's because it's real, isn't it? The bloke's in the suit moving it around, so it's not going to be made out of actual iron, is it?
No, obviously it's not going to be made out of actual iron.
The way
I just mean it's
the
very
armor.
It's very obviously TV eyes.
And the length of the episodes. Those are the two things we're ragging on shit for tonight.
No! Okay, fine.
When you say the power armor doesn't look like heavy enough, all I can picture is Jesse Ventura from Running Man when he has to get like plated up in the army. He's like, I'm not wearing this stuff.
Almost as good as that.
Is it?
Almost as good.
I might watch it then.
It's okay.
Good stuff on Netflix. I was about to say you should watch more Netflix, Mark, and that's because I turned on Ripley and I went, no, not for me. I watched like the first 15 minutes. Not for me. It's black and white. It's deeply pretentious and nothing was happening. I was not having it. I was like, I like Andrew Scott and no. And then for some reason, I mean, I don't know. I'm glutton for Netflix punishment, literally on my tombstone. I turned it back on a couple of days later, binged it. I must have watched the whole thing in a day. And I absolutely loved it. I thought it was tremendous. And the black and white worked. It's a beautiful show. Andrew Scott is tremendous. I think for me, it goes much deeper and darker than the movie, which I also enjoyed, but didn't have anywhere near this kind of ability to extract tension out of tiny, very Hitchcockian situations. You know, you're up in a flat, you know that people are after you. The phone rings and it just stays with the phone ringing and then he doesn't pick it up. And then he goes outside to look over the balcony down the stairwell and see who it is asking for him. And then he hears who it is, and then he goes back in the flat, and then he has to wait the footsteps that come up the stairs. Oh, my God, they extract so much tension out of it.
I bloody hope so, because
you've
got to
boring.
Do a better bloody job of it than you just did, Kat.
It's a very, very meticulously drawn charm. It's really good. It's proper Hitchcock style. It's very nice.
All right, sold.
It's not flash. You're not sold at all. You will never stick it on, Mark. It's good TV. Your allergies are flaring.
No, that's fair.
And again, we come to Civil War. Did you expect this to be our number one pick, 9 out of 10?
Man, I was expecting to like it because, by and large, I like an Alex Garland movie. Mm-hmm. I just picked out in the review I wrote for Civil War that it, generally I like Alex Garland movies, like with a little asterisk to say, like, but he does tend to like mess it up at the end, very end of the movie. Not this time. Oh my goodness. This is maybe the first time I've watched an Alex Garland movie and all the way through gone, I understand why this is in the film. And like, it's maybe a big swing, or it's maybe like really grotesque or brutal, but I get why it needs to be here, which is not always the case with his films, particularly with Men, which was just, yeah. I
it was the best thing in the whole film, Tom.
Yeah. Anyway, so the Civil War, was looking forward to it because I thought what we're going to have is kind of like a broad-ish satire on political division. Nope. It sure ain't that. It is. It goes out of its way to not be that, and it's all the better for it. It's more like Garland's way of criticizing the way that the news is reported or recorded, and it's just quite a subtle film, despite its real graphic violence at parts. And yeah, just absolutely gripping. Hour and 45 minutes. I don't know, I'm stuck on runtimes today. Oh, I guess what I mean is that it's really tightly paced and it just whizzes by and you are engrossed all the way through in the journey of four war correspondents who are reporting ostensibly on this modern US Civil War. And Kirsten Dunst is in it and she is fantastic. Stephen McKinley Henderson, who has been in other Alex Garland stuff like Debs, he is absolutely blinding in it and is just perfect casting. And it's just really a really hard and sobering watch, and it all just works with what Alex Garland seems to be trying to do. And at the end of the film, I didn't feel like I agreed with his opinion, but I liked that he had like shared it with me in such an interesting way. So
nice.
Yeah. You got to go see it. Wait. It's brilliant.
I did. I mean, I need to. I need to see it. Yes. It sounds absolutely tremendous.
It does.
It's definitely on the list. I'm not sure whether I'll IMAX it, but it's definitely.
What were we? You know, when we did our anticipated scores, didn't we score this quite highly at the start of the year? I thought.
Well, don't ask me that.
I think so.
Yeah, so I don't think it's come as a surprise that it's. I think it's come as a surprise it's as good.
Did it come as a surprise that after watching the trailer, though? I think we're all a bit.
Yeah, it's.
Are they going to pull it off?
We all think it's going to be the Division video game adaptation.
Yeah. Is what we were talking about. Oh, we gave Godzilla vs. Kong a 7. Let's have a look. And we gave Driveway Dolls a 7. Let's not talk about that. Civil War, we gave an 8.
Yeah.
All of us. 8s across the board.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
I would say I was surprised it got a 9.
Yeah. Thought it was going to be good. It was phenomenal.
Excellent. Hurrah!
Very nice. Very, very. A quick shout out. I've just started Sean Penn's latest straight to Amazon movie. It's called Asphalt City, but they renamed it to the utterly bland Black Files in the UK because they want no one to watch it, which is fine. But it's pretty good so far. It's definitely paramedic training day. So he's the Denzel Washington of the day. I haven't got to the stage where he's the Denzel Washington of the day, but it's very stylishly shot. It's very nicely put together, and it comes to Amazon. By the time this goes out, people already have seen it, so it's getting a nod in there, because I was going to put it in the we haven't covered it, but it gets a nod. And I am halfway through Baby Reindeer. Maybe you've heard of it, guys. I don't know.
Not until we spoke about it just now.
Yeah, and Mark's nodding his head in a kind of, that's on Netflix, so I don't do that. Okay. Well, Baby Reindeer, based on a true story, comedian gets stalked very subtly. You know, it's like a very innocuous to begin with. It's fabulously unraveled. I just recently found out that it played the guy who is the central actor was the guy who was stalked in real life. And it's very, very nicely done. It's deeply uncomfortable, cringing, close your eyes TV, loads of bad decisions, loads
it's a bit,
of
bit like our poddy then.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. But they can, when they listen to just the audio version, they don't have to go through all of this. Anyway, highly recommended, very, very binge worthy. Put it on, 30 minute episodes, all dropped at once.
All right, okay.
Our discussion of the month is what makes a 10 out of 10 movie and TV show. And I did a bit of research into this, and we had a lot of nines recently. We had Civil War, Ripley, Fallout. Simon gave Kind Hearts and Coronets 9. We gave Abyss, Primal Fear, Blood on Satan's Claw, All of Us Strangers, Starman, Wages of Fear, Godzilla Minus One, Killers of the Flower Moon, Peeping Tom, Culprits, Conan, Holdovers, and Fargo. This is just in the last year. Tens are really quite rare. And looking at like the stats as I've laid them out, it's interesting to see what we give tens, because almost all of our tens are for older films that have graduated into classic territory. So Psycho, Wicker Man, Drive, Robocop, Pulp Fiction, you know, all the ones you can get away with giving tens to. The newer ones are really rare. I'm the one who keeps giving them out, apparently. So I gave 10s to both Dunes, Dune Part 1 and Dune 2, Maverick, The Bear, and Andor. Tom gave 1 10 in all of his reviewing. Well, 2 10s. What's the other 10?
Nomadland.
Oh, I didn't go back that far. I only went back 5 years. Is it in there? 5 years ago? Oh, my God. Okay. Well, I went back 5 years and got blind, clearly. So 2 10s. Poor Things and Nomadland.
Yeah.
Gave Oppenheimer a 10 out of 10, and Mark gave a 10 out of 10 to Picard. This is in recent
only past. Season 3.
Yeah, only season, absolutely.
No.
I don't know whether, I mean, what my statement of that wasn't to reveal some kind of, well, why does Mark give high scores to TV? Well, statement. I was trying to say that we all seem to be reluctant to giving 10s to things that are relatively new. I'm slightly less reluctant, but you guys go and see movies, a lot of movies, probably more movies at the cinema than I do. But a 10 out of the gate is really elusive. Really elusive. And it's interesting that we can look back retrospectively at all of these great films, and they are great films. Slap a 10 on Ratha Khan. And it's fine. No one's going to quibble with a 10 on Maltese Falcon. But it's harder with newer stuff that hasn't had that time to kind of sink into the audience. Either that, or they just don't make 10 out of 10 movies anymore, which is what Mark's thinking.
Isn't it more to do with us as reviewers?
Well, because that's what we grew up with. We grew up with all of these movies.
We've been doing it for so long. It takes that much more to be an impression, to be that 10 out of 10.
I don't think so. Of the reviews that I've done for AVF, I've given 13 tens.
For the movies?
Yeah, well, a combination of movies, 4Ks and Blu-rays. So, for example, Past Lives, Blu-ray, 10 out of 10 in one of my monthly roundups.
Just the movie. You gave Past Lives the movie 10 out of 10.
Yep. I gave two recent documentaries 10 out of 10. The Squaring the Circle, the story of Hypgnosis, and the RoboDoc document. You know, the 5.5 hour RoboCop.
You are quite right, Mark. I haven't gone through all your top 10.
You weren't expected to. But it's... I don't think that it's a newness factor. I think that it comes back to that for a 10 out of 10, for me, I'm speaking just for me here, it's more than just the film that pushes it over into a 10 out of 10. It's where you saw it, when you saw it, how you saw it, where you were in your life. All those 10s out of 10s that I can think of. The film occupies a place of something more within me. That's what pushes it into a 10 10 category. Past Lives, you know, very, very reminiscent of a very personal experience that had me sort of almost all the way through it. And it's the same for the 10s that I've given. It's not that it's just we don't like new shit, we only like old shit.
I think it's
back to what Simon said, although from a slightly different angle. I think it is absolutely us that makes the difference between a film being a 9 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Well, we definitely tip it across the line. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of subjectivity, obviously, that goes into reviewing, but there's a lot of subjectivity in the 9 to 10 transition. Unless you have 40 years of it's a classic behind you, where you feel much more the other way around. You'd have to have a subjective reason to not give it a 10 out of 10. If it's like Citizen Kane or Casablanca, you'd have to really go, this one didn't work for me to drop it down. And even then it would only be a 9.
I think it's the difference, isn't it, between seeing something for the first time and seeing something for the fifth time, and you're awarding that, you're pushing it over the line for different reasons in each of those cases. Mm-hmm. Like Mark and Simon were saying, if you're seeing something for the first time, and not only are you understanding everything that the film is trying to do, and the film is trying to do all those things, and it gets everything right, it also then does something for you as a person. Mm-hmm. Whereas the thing that's pushing, for example, say Pulp Fiction or Citizen Kane or something like that over the line from a 9 to a 10 is it has had cultural impact. It's not just important to me, but it is important almost universally. And you just can't know that when something is, you know, when it's you're new. Seeing this on opening day, you can't know like the cultural, like universality of something. So you're seeing it with like two perspectives. And, yes, probably seeing Pulp Fiction for the first time in my life, I would have said that's a 10 out of 10 movie. Like, this doesn't get better.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Other example, like RoboCop, the first time I watched that, I probably would have been like, yay, this is amazing. Because I would have been like, you know, 9 years old. But you look back and you see, oh my goodness, objectively, this film has some wonky bits, but such an impact that can't be ignored.
Yes, I'd agree with that. I mean, it's hard not to fold in a little bit, and this is a future podcast, but like the notion that we make a few too many movies and we have too many movies to watch. I'm not saying that in a really... I'm just saying in the sense that back in the day, I would have seen, I don't know, Heat 3 times at the cinema. I would drive 3 times at the cinema, Leon 3 times at the cinema. They just weren't, and that isn't even that far back, like 20 years ago, but I'm not talking about like 30 years ago. I'm not talking about even RoboCop days. I'm talking about a period of time where I would have seen these movies multiple times because they were the best thing in the cinema and they were there for a while because there weren't loads of other things to displace them. I mean, if you could see Drive multiple times in the cinema, I mean, it's not a big movie. It shows that there wasn't a lot of stuff coming out all at the same time. These days, There's so much at the cinema, so much on streaming, so much going on. I don't often rewatch movies. They have to be quite special for me to rewatch them. I'm more likely to rewatch a movie I've just picked up in 4K, which is a classic already that I've already watched 10 times. It's weird. It's like the new ones don't get the chance to ever graduate. And I don't necessarily know whether they warrant it, but I mean, I can't.
No, that's really interesting, Kaz, because I don't know about you guys, but my opinions change on a film as I watch it again and again and again and again. And I do watch a lot of films, and therefore I do a lot of rewatches. And there are films that the first time out the gate I watched, I thought, meh, it was all right. And then I will pick up a new super duper Arrow 4K All Singing All Dancing box set because, you know, FOMO.
You're you.
What can I say? Exactly. And I'll watch it again and I'll go, holy shit, yeah, that film is actually better than I thought it was. And then, of course, you know, Criterion will release an even super duper revision a few years later, and I'll pick it up again and I'll watch that again. And I think, back to what you said there, Kez, I think it's not just the multiple viewings lets it sink into your subconscious. I think it's there's so many films that I've watched out the gate, didn't really like, but the times I've watched them again, I feel like they are better and better and better. And go the other way. There's films I thought were absolutely amazing.
Which you've got,
I mean, you know, I did have an almost undying love for Kurt Wimmer's Equilibrium. I mean, let's be honest. When I saw Gunn Carter, I thought, this is the most amazing thing I have ever seen in my entire life.
How quickly can we fire Mark?
I know.
But on subsequent rewatches, you do kind of go, oh, yeah.
it's not really
that good, is it?
But
I like that. But oh, yeah.
You're going to hold on to that love for Stealth, aren't you? Yeah, now we're talking.
Stealth is an 11 out of 10 every day of the week.
Yeah, exactly. So I have this delirious feeling that I gave Stealth a ridiculously high score, but it wasn't 11.
No, but do you know what, Kaz? I think that then comes on to there are the 10 out of 10s that are objectively excellent films.
And then the ones
and
that
then
are typos.
And then there are the 10s out of 10 which are utter crap, but you adore for some warped, messed up reason.
I don't know. I don't know how often I've given a 10 out of 10 to utter crap. I mean, I might have stretched it across the line on a couple, but
yeah, I don't think I could find it in myself to give a guilty pleasure a 10 out of 10, because at the back of my mind, there's always something that's like, yeah, but I know it's not. Like, I know it's a bit shit.
What joyless asses.
You know what? I say all of this and I'm looking at the list, and I gave Brotherhood of the Wolf a 10 out of 10 and I gave Point Break a 10 out of 10. They're both sitting in there amongst Back to the Future, Wrath of Khan, Carlito's Ways, really easy ones to justify. Mm. Point Break and Brotherhood of the Wolf are sitting there.
Brotherhood of the Wolf is objectively astounding.
But we're talking about stuff that's like...
I'm talking the Room.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, I was thinking like...
Why would I give The Room a 10 out of 10?
All right. So here you go. Here's an example from my...
Give me a Seagal example. I'll relate to it.
Exit Wounds, right?
No. It's like a six or a seven.
I have watched that more than a lot of films.
It's great. Absolute trash. No.
I could never give it a 10.
Maybe a 7. Maybe I gave it a 7 on site. And even then I was like, oh, really? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But I had a blast. But it doesn't get a 10 out of 10 blast.
Ah, okay. But you two only review films for the site. Well, yes. But you only review films for the site, don't you?
What, you just do 10s on the side on Letterboxd? You're like, 10 to this, 10 to that.
Oh, yeah. So basically, everything I score 5 or below on the site, I sneak off and give it 10 out of 10 on Letterboxd.
Vice versa, like, Mark's... Mark's real opinion is on Letterboxd. Like,
exactly.
If you want to go and see what he really thinks.
Wallet of old ass.
What does Mark really think about Ghostbusters Afterlife? It's on Letterboxd and it's like a 3 out of 10.
Yeah. I mean, yes.
Review number 2. Tom was right.
That's all I want from life.
Jungle Cruise, 10 out of 10. Tom was wrong. I obviously feel very different. I mean, the thing for me that makes me laugh is Tammy and the T-Rex. You never heard of this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
I think it was Paul Walker's and Denise Richards' debut, and it was made in 1993 because an entrepreneur discovered a fun fair with a crappy T-Rex, and it was just before Jurassic Park was coming out, and he said, I'm going to hop on this gravy train, made the most rubbish film about a boyfriend getting killed and having his brain transplanted into the animatronic T-Rex.
This is just you, Mark. It's like...
But no!
You can't give this a 10 out of 10.
Yes, I can, and yes, I have.
Just because like Scream Factory put on a 4K disc doesn't mean it's a good film.
I don't.
Vinegar Syndrome, actually.
Vinegar Syndrome. Oh my God.
And do you know what? I didn't buy it. That's one of the few 4Ks I haven't got.
Oh, thank God, because we would have had a 10 out of 10 review. Tammy and the T-Rex.
Darn tooting. That'll teach the site to let me have it as a platform. No, but in all seriousness, I mean, I know you lot probably wouldn't go that far, but there are films that I just know. I mean, Killer Clowns from Outer Space. That is a film that means so much to me, and I've seen so many times, and I would watch that any day of the week over your Cool Hand Lukes or your Maltese Falcons or your Casablancas. And
does that make it a 10 out of 10 then?
So hang on. So I've got a choice here, and I've got all those classics, and I've got Killer Clowns, and I choose Killer Clowns. I mean, I'm not being funny. What more do you want to make it a 10?
I know, but I do that with Seagal, but that doesn't make any of his films 10 out of 10. It just doesn't. And absolutely not. They're terrible films. He's got terrible hair. Really, it's really not. It's not on. But come on. I have a blast watching them. That when they're bad, they're so bad that they're entertaining. I'm never going to give them a 10. I'm going to respect the fact that it's entertaining me. But I appreciate your passion, which I think is interesting, because I think that's a part of what works for us in movies, not just our passion for them, but also when we respond to the passion that is shown in the movies. Mm. When they make a movie... Yeah. That feels like they really put everything into it. And I think that that's a huge part of it. It's hard not to draw on recent ones, but like Top Gun Maverick, I felt like everyone put 1,000% into what they achieved in that. And I had a fantastic experience watching it. And no one's going to agree with it being a 10 out of 10 movie, which is why I gave it 11 out of 10 for like its first hour when it was live on site and no one noticed. It was an absolute blast. And I can see where the subjectivity comes in there. I can see where sitting in the cinema room and having my son sit on me and use me as a cockpit and fly my thumbs as we're going around corners, where that all informs my opinion of it. So that does go into it, but it's also they crafted it with this passion and this dedication. And it was evident in Dune for me, a real Villanueva's really going, I'm going to put everything on screen. I'm going to use every camera angle, maximum effort. I'm going to spend, you know, like 6 weeks preparing for one shot of a worm coming out of the sand. You know, it really feels like a labor of love. And I think that that's across the board for a lot of the films I love. They've had to have had that level of effort put in. I think that's what works for me. I'm not sure Seagal quite puts that level of effort in, but we'll say that he does, you know.
I think he sits down for most of his scenes these days.
He does these days. He used to occasionally stand. No, the best memes are running. His best memes are running. He does the flappy arm thing. It's fantastic. I love the flappy arm thing.
10 out of 10 for the flappy arms.
But, yeah. But I mean, doesn't this ultimately come down to a discussion that the four of us have had many, many times, which is scores are a load of old guff.
Yes.
We'd really rather not put an arbitrary number on them.
Oh, I loved putting an 11 on Maverick. I really loved that. I took screenshots and put it up on the wall.
We know people like to have a number, and most of the time it feels like people don't read the 1,000 words you spent hours. Yes.
You've got to get over this, Mark. Sorry,
when I say people, I mean Kaz.
I agree with you.
Fine, but if it was down to me, I wouldn't stick a number on. Because you're right. I mean, what is the difference between a 9 out of 10? Ultimately, what we've just talked about here, what makes the difference between a 9 out of 10 is something almost unknowable that is wholly personal to you.
Yeah, something within yourself. Yeah,
you know, and a little bit that classic status that it's graduated over time. A little bit.
Again, I would still say that those 10s out of 10s, they still mean something. I mean, otherwise, you know, why is Cool Hand Luke for me a 9.5, whereas American Graffiti is a 10? So it's not just all, you know.
I don't know, Mark. I don't know. Cool Hand Luke's a 10.
I think that was a rhetorical question, Kaz. Yes.
Thank you, Tom. And of course, none of that lends itself to what we're being asked to do, which is to help others, you know.
Yeah.
Know whether or not something is worth watching, and yet we're all sat here saying, well, the top mark is solely for me, not for anyone else. It's solely for me. So
I think you're right. I think it what tips it over the line is a lot to do with a personal thing, but I do think that the passion that they put in, we respond to. I think the ideas they come up with, if they come up with a particular hook, worked back in the day a lot more than it does now, because we're seeing a lot of remakes. But the hook of like Back to the Future, or the hook of, I don't know, Robocop, a good idea really can set off a good movie. And I know that seems really obvious, but it seems like a lot of the time, quite rightly, we're running out of ideas. And I don't think that's true. I think it's just the good ideas often don't translate to the movies we see at the cinema. But a good idea, a bit of creativity, a lot of passion.
It's got to catch you off guard as well. It's got to be more than you expect, basically. Mm.
Yes.
There's got to be an element of it which is like doing something that would never have occurred to you, or, you know, making you feel or think in a way that never would have occurred to you without having seen.
That
piece of filmmaking.
And that, just like you described in Civil War, that idea that it's giving you something that doesn't occur to you and makes you think about it afterwards.
Mm. Yeah.
I think that thinking about it afterwards is the reason why people rewatch movies. Sometimes, I'm not saying they don't also watch them just for sheer Maverick entertainment, but, you know, like, I that really sat with me. There are some themes and some ideas that really appealed to me there. I might want to go through and see how that worked from the beginning, see how that means more to me. I think that things that stay with you give you pause for thought.
I think that's what Tom just said is really interesting about expectations. For me, you know, we talk about, we only see the majority of modern films once.
Mm.
So many times expectations banana skin me, because I'll watch a trailer, I'll read another review, you know, or I'll hear something and suddenly my expectations go, this film's gonna be the best thing I've ever seen.
Why do you do that?
But I can't help it. Oh. I can't help it.
Too positive, man.
So pretty much. But so many times my expectation going in scuppers my view coming out, and that's again why I watch films again. You know, the expectations are gone at that point, so maybe that's why it helps me on a second and a third watch, where I start to feel better about a film. So yeah,
Mark just likes these films. He's a real weirdo.
Yeah,
no, you know what? I love films so much that I can't abide modern trailers. I mean, I only watched the Godzilla one because I didn't think I was reviewing it. And I was like, eh, it's Godzilla. Is it really going to spoil the movie for me?
Yeah, but, really did that trailer. Oh my God.
But like, I never watched a single trailer of Dune 2. Not one. And I feel like these days, they don't often make good trailers the way they used to.
Of trailer making as a podcast there, aren't they?
Well, it really is an AI style of, you've got 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes to play with here. Tell me the entire movie with flash images and a few words in the background. I mean, it's really going for it. I mean, there have been a few good ones. The one for Maverick, the early one for Winter Soldier. You know, there are some good trailers out there, but then there's the later one for Winter Soldier, which shows you the ending to the film. They're like, why? So, in films that I'm going to see at the cinema, I do not watch the trailers. I do not want any false anticipation or concern.
I wish I had your willpower.
But if you're going to see it, if you're just going to see it, then what good is going to come out of that trailer?
Well, you can tell me that, but that doesn't stop me watching the Alien Romulus trailer 5 times, and then God knows how many reaction videos to the Alien Romulus trailer.
I have seen a clapperboard with an alien. That's all I've seen. Despite you pinging me and going, that's how to do a great trailer. I'm not doing it. Anyway.
I wasn't pinging that to you. I was pinging it to Tom and Simon, actually.
Yeah, well played.
I didn't watch it either. Cows,
get trod.
Anyway.
Are we done yet, Kaz?
We are done. We are done.
This podcast has been a 3 out of 10.
What, in your opinion?
No. Just you wait till the comments come in. I think you'll find in everyone's opinion.
Oh, my God. They're all going to give scores. Do let us know if there's anything we haven't covered that you think we should check out. That's it for the AV Forums Movies and TV podcast this week. Thanks to the movies team. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a like and subscribe to the channel, plus hit the notification bell so you don't miss out when we publish our live streams, product reviews, and more. If you really like the podcast, then buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/AVForums. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and bookmark AVForums.com for the latest reviews, news, and videos. Plus, why not leave us a 5-star rating or a 10 out of 10 on whichever service you use if they allow it, but only if you enjoyed the show. Thank you for watching and listening, and join us for another podcast real soon.
Bye.